me your answer due. I'm half crazy, all for the love of you.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's Nat King Cole, of course, singing Bicycle Built for Two. We know where our bicycling conversations usually lead on this show, to the legal mumbo jumbo. So to kick off our nod to the 2013 Bike Columbus Festival this week, we've invited back to the show bike lawyer Steve Magus. Steve is an avid bicyclist, motorcyclist, and Ohio trial attorney based in Cincinnati. He's handled more than 250 bike-related cases in his career, which goes all the way back to 1982, I believe. Yeah. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Well, thank you very much, and glad to be here in Columbus instead of sitting in an office somewhere or in a car.
I was going to say to our regular listeners, you might notice that he's not it's not scratchy sounding, and he is not by phone. He is in the studio with us today, and we really appreciate it. You know, Steve, there's never a shortage of commentary about bicycle rules of the road. In today's dispatch, a Westerville man pointed out that the standards for bicyclists and motorists are so different. Bicyclists don't have to have insurance. Bicyclists don't have to have taken any kind of instruction. Bicyclists don't have any licensing requirements for their car or as a bicyclist. There's no mandated safety things like helmets and lights and that kind of a thing.
Well, that's not correct. There are lights required.
Okay. But he wrapped it up by saying, but bicyclists demand the same rights. He says it's not fair.
Well, there's a number of issues you hit on there.
Okay.
Let's start with licensing, for example. We license people to do things that are dangerous to do. So driving a car, driving a 2-ton bowling ball and trying to keep it on a very narrow lane is a dangerous thing. And for 1 second of inattention, you can kill or maim someone. You can hit another car. You can run over a house and run through a house, whatever. I mean, there's a high level of risk and danger in driving a car. Many people want to poo-poo that, but that's the reality is it's a 2-ton bowling ball. Mm-hmm. Driving a bicycle doesn't have that risk. If the bicyclist screws something up, they're going to hurt themselves, but they're not going to take out a school bus or whatever. So there's from the licensing, the bureaucracy of licensing millions of bicyclists would be overwhelming compared to whatever good it might do. For the most part, bicyclists know the rules of the road. Now, part of what we're trying to do is get them to actually use the rules of the road and actually follow the rules of the road. And I've been preaching that for 25 years now, that when we get to a point where police are ticketing bicyclists for rules violations in the same manner that they ticket motorists, then we'll have made some progress, frankly.
Because what better way to learn than being dinged?
It's being dinged, and when it hits the pocketbook, it tends to hit home. So, yeah.
All right. So insurance?
Insurance is another one. The same sort of thing applies. We have people get insurance when they drive their cars because it's a dangerous thing, and if you screw something up, you're going to cause a big problem. For a bicyclist, they're going to hurt themselves. You know, hopefully they have health insurance.
But bicyclists can cause traffic problems.
Oh, absolutely.
They may not end up with a lot of personal damage, but they could cause a car to veer off the road.
That's true.
And yet there's very little or any liability on their part?
Oh, there's a ton of liability on their part, and there is insurance to cover it if they have homeowner's insurance.
Okay.
And homeowner's insurance covers errors that you make when you're riding your bicycle. If you're in a bike wreck, there's 4 or 5 different insurance policies that are triggered all at once. The other guy's auto policy, your homeowner's policy, if you're liable, your health insurance, obviously. Your auto insurance can also be triggered from 2 specific provisions. And then if you happen to carry an umbrella policy, then that can also be triggered. So all of those things can come into play when a bicyclist does something wrong or when a car does something wrong or whether something happens as a combination of both people making a mistake.
With me in the studio, our old friend Steve Magus. He is
co-author
of the book Bicycling and the Law. Has a foreword by Lance Armstrong. If you have a question or comment,
we tone
for
that
Steve,
down these days.
Well, it's true though. You got a lot of cards in here.
Well, I gave those to you, and that's a card that I put out on the front. There's a beautiful painting by a New York City artist who does nothing but bicycle paintings. And on the back, there's a summary of some of the basic rules of Ohio law that cyclists ought to know. Some are pretty obvious. Some they may not know because when you're interacting with police officers, sometimes you get told things that aren't exactly correct. Get off the road. You're not allowed to ride here. You're not allowed to ride two abreast. Right. Well, on the back of the card is a brief statement and a citation to the proper Ohio Revised Code section that provides that rule.
If you have a question or comment about bicycling law from the motorist's point of view or from the bicyclist's point of view, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And John in Whitehall, you're on the air with Stephen Magus. Welcome.
Hello. I was calling about an incident where I pulled into a parking lot. I stopped my car, and a bicycle still ran into me. The insurance company determined it was my fault. Hmm. And I talked to a truck driver. He said the same thing happened to him. He was at a red light, and a bicycle ran into him, and it was his fault. And I'm not saying I'm a bike rider.
Yeah.
I rode with when my kids were little, we rode. And now that I'm 64, my kids and I still ride. But we ride in the parks. And in the 50s, I rode on the sidewalk. And if somebody's come by with a bunch of groceries, you just stop and let them go. I think the highway should just be for cars.
Well, there's a historical perspective to that. Highways are actually created or paved for bicycles.
Right, back in the late 1800s.
Yeah, they started out as roadways for bicycles. But John, let's have Steve Magus address your concerns because.
Sure. Well, John, it sounds like, without knowing all the facts, that you can't make a legal determination.
Right.
But the same rules for analyzing crashes apply when a bike is involved as when a car is involved. So if you were stopped and a bike rear ends you and you were traveling lawfully and the bicyclist wasn't, then the bicyclist can get a ticket up for an assured clear distance violation, and the insurance company should treat it the same as if you were rear-ended by a Humvee. So,
but what about where they hit him when he's pulling into a parking lot?
And again, without having all the facts,
right,
it's tough. If someone's on a sidewalk riding and you're pulling into a parking lot, you know, there is a duty to yield to people on sidewalks.
Okay.
But there's also many cities have laws where bikes aren't allowed on sidewalks.
Mm-hmm.
So you have all these sort of layered and conflicting legal responsibilities. And generally, if that's the case, then it's kind of everybody has to act reasonably and not, you know, do something stupid. And so it's hard to know without knowing all the facts, you know, what the issue is there. But
all right, John. Well, hang in there. Thanks a lot for that call. We know that there are lots of different ways that things can be interpreted. The Ohio Bicycle Federation has sent a trio of proposed law changes to the Ohio General Assembly. I think all three of them are incorporated into House Bill 145,
Actually, two are in 145. One of them has already made it. It went into effect on July 1st.
In the budget bill?
No,
okay.
It was passed 3 months ago, 90 days ago, and then went into effect on July 1st.
And so what went into effect?
The definition of bicycle was changed.
Okay, so how did it change?
Well, it changed because of a case and an odd situation in Lakewood, Ohio. A fellow up there, Vinny Latessa, has an interesting contraption. It's called a Rhodes car. And if you look up Rhodes car on the internet, you'll find these four-wheeled pedal vehicles. He liked to ride his four-wheeled pedal vehicle around Lakewood, and he has an autistic son who was getting bigger, who he couldn't put on the back of his bicycle anymore, and he couldn't haul him in a trailer anymore, but this car was perfect. So he liked to drive his son around the city of Lakewood. Well, he got pulled over, and the cop stopped him for driving a toy on the road, and that was the ticket that he got. And when we looked at the definition, because he contacted me about this issue, and his family did, and at the time, the definition of bicycle was two or three wheels.
Mm.
He had four. So it didn't fit the definition,
right,
of a bicycle, but it was not a toy. It was a 200-pound, you know, 5 foot wide, it looked like a giant golf cart that you pedaled around. It doesn't go very fast, so I think that was the main concern, was he was taking up a lot of real estate and not going very fast.
Mm-hmm.
So he beat the ticket. He contacted me. We got it through the Ohio Bicycle Federation. We added it to our list of legislative agenda items. That one got picked up. There was I think it was the big transportation bill that was in March.
That's right.
It got picked up by somebody there, added as an amendment, and got sucked into that and went into effect on July 1st. So the other two are pending and House Bill 145.
And then, so then in House Bill 145 is a 3-foot passing law and malfunctioning traffic signal. Talk about the malfunctioning traffic signal first.
That is a, it's a change that, let's say you're riding your bike and you pull up to a stoplight and the light doesn't change.
You're riding it legally. You're in the lane.
You're in the lane.
Properly in the lane. Okay.
And you're waiting for the light to change and it never changes.
Right.
And the reason it doesn't change is because the vehicle detector, you don't have enough metal for the magnetic sensors to pick you up.
Which are under the pavement.
And that's an issue for bicycles and motorcycles. And if there's some tricks, if you know kind of how those sensors are made, you can try to line yourself up over the top of them. But if they don't work, the question is that a malfunctioning signal or not? And to me, if someone had that case, I think I could make a good argument under existing law. But we decided to make it clear that that was an issue that a bicyclist could, if it's safe to do so, they could get through that red light, make their left turn without committing a legal infraction. So that was that section of that bill.
And then the 3-foot passing law.
The 3-foot passing law
is not law yet.
It's not law yet. Yeah. Not in the state. It is law in at least 3 cities, and several more are considering it. So the 3-foot bill that is percolating is a 1-sentence change to existing law. Current law says when you pass someone, you have to pass them at a safe distance. There's no definition of that. So if you're driving your Humvee and I'm in my pickup and you pass me at a couple of inches, so what? If you move over a couple inches and leave a mark on my car, our insurance guys will take care of it. If you pass a bicyclist at a couple of inches, that's not safe because a bicyclist needs some space to be able to move around things. And if you slightly nudge that cyclist with your mirror, that's going to be a catastrophic result. So the bill says for when you pass a cyclist, a safe distance is 3 feet or more. That's all the bill says.
Let's try to squeeze in one quick call before we take a quick break. And Jane in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a comment about the idea of licensing. I don't really feel that licensing is such a burden on a cyclist or should be on the state.
You mean licensing the vehicle as in the bicycle or operator?
Honestly, I think that a cyclist should have a license like you would have a driver's license.
Okay.
As opposed to licensing the bicycle necessarily. Possibly you should have to have your license on your bicycle and do both at once. I don't know. That part I haven't figured out, but I strongly agree that education is going to be the most necessary thing, both on the part of cyclists and on motorists. As a motorist, I am often confused by the behavior of cyclists because I'm not really sure what the cyclists' regulations are. I was driving down Morse Avenue the other day, and a cyclist was riding on the line between the far right and the middle lane. Now, I'm pretty sure that that's not appropriate. At the intersection of North Broadway and High Street, you have, in the southbound lane, a right turn lane. Now, if a cyclist is going straight ahead, they obviously shouldn't be in the right turn lane.
Mm-hmm.
But should they be in the crosswalk to be going straight ahead?
Steve knows the answers to this question.
It's just that
we don't know.
If you're in the right turn lane and you're making that right turn, and cyclists are just sort of going through that crosswalk.
Whatever makes them most comfortable. Yeah. It just depends. Yeah. Steve Magus?
Well, you raise several good points and hot button issues on the licensing. I think I disagree with because most cyclists are licensed drivers for the most part. And the ones that generally are out on the roadway are generally those who know how to drive a car. So I don't know that getting a separate bicycle license is going to do much for that. But the points you make about the cycling behaviors are things that, as bike advocates, we are constantly struggling to work at. And the issue of where to ride in the lane is a huge one. The white line between 2 straight-ahead lanes is absolutely the wrong place to ride unless you are transitioning from the right lane to the left lane for the purpose of making a left turn down the road, then I can see someone kind of cruising over, but you shouldn't be hovering over that line. The issue with a right turn lane is, again, a good one. Some cyclists are just afraid to be in the lane with cars, and that's something from an educational
perspective. But it's sending a wrong message.
Absolutely,
when you're
is.
In the right lane, because then it's the motorist must think, well, they're turning right.
My point was going to be that they have to learn. If you're going to interact on the roadway, once you cross that white line, you're in the game with the big boys, and you have to be able to handle that. And if you can't handle that and behave like a vehicle operator, then you should rethink your road riding. And I think places like Columbus tend to see a lot of interesting behavior because it's so flat. In Cincinnati, you can't go, 5 minutes without having a big climb. So, if you're going to get on the road, you have to be a pretty sturdy, rider. Whereas here, you can go from North Columbus to South Columbus and never climb a hill. Mm-hmm. And so it's a lot easier to get around, and you tend to see more casual bike behavior.
Makes it a great bicycling town.
Absolutely.
But also a lot of different kinds of conflicts. Jane, thanks for your call. We really appreciate it. We're going to take a quick break before we continue our conversation about cycling with a nod to the 2013 Bike Columbus Festival this week. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Support comes from Wexner Heritage Village, home of geriatric planning solutions. Now there's a GPS for families navigating the complex and changing landscape of senior health care. More on Wexner Heritage Village's geriatric planning solutions at whv.org.
You're mobile, and we are too. Now you can get 89.7 NPR News anytime, anywhere with the free WOSU Public Media mobile app. It features live audio streaming, news stories on demand, and podcasts of your favorite shows. Just go to wosu.org/mobile app and download the app today.
Support comes from the Columbus Symphony. Picnic with the Pops welcomes Natalie Merchant to the Columbus Commons this Saturday, July 13th. The former lead vocalist of 10,000 Maniacs joins the CSO, showcasing her new artistic path, performing songs she composed for orchestras. Tickets at picnicwiththepops.com.
Bicycle, bicycle, bicycle. I want to ride my bicycle.
He didn't think we were going to have a show about bicycling and not use as much of bicycling music as is out there. There's so much great stuff out there, too. We won't even scratch the surface. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The 2013 Bike Columbus Festival this year is supposed to be bigger and better than ever, mirroring the growing popularity of bicycles on the roadways. I left off the last segment with a reference. Well, I did not. I'm sorry. I didn't do a darn thing. I messed up. I'm on my wrong script. See, I'm very scripted. Okay, so joining us now to talk about that is Barb Seckler, director of the Institute for Active Living for the Columbus Department of Public Health. Welcome back to the show, Barb.
Thank you, Ann, and I want to congratulate you for winning the best radio talk show in this month's Columbus Monthly. I was in there looking for the
best. It was the reader's pick, not
well,
the.
I was reading, looking for the best bike ride, and I found the best radio talk show. So there you go. Congratulations.
Well, thanks to the readers of Columbus Monthly for that one. Very, very, it's very heartwarming to know they're out there and listening and stuff. So thank you, Barb.
You're welcome.
Okay, so we're going to get calls. Steve Magus is still with us, so have no fear. We'll continue our conversations about the legal aspect. But let's talk a little bit about the 2013 Bike Columbus Festival this year. It's supposed to be bigger and better. So how many Bike Columbus Festivals have there been?
Well, Mayor Coleman and Columbus Public Health have come together for 6 rides since July 2008. This is the 4th annual Twilight Evening Ride.
Okay, so the festival is bigger this year?
It's bigger and better because this year, instead of...
Better is kind of a qualitative term, but
Yeah, well, we'll find that out Friday night, won't we? I'll tell you, it's bigger this year because instead of doing a weekend, we decided that the city, Consider Biking, and Yay Bikes would come together as three signature events. So Consider Biking had their May Women's Summit, and Friday, July 12th is the Mayor's Twilight Ride. And then Yay Bikes has Bike the Sea Bus, Labor Day weekend. And we're doing, we are working very hard to promote all of the bike events and rides for the entire season.
The fourth annual Mayor's Twilight Ride, what are the plans for that?
Well, we are going to have hundreds of riders get together Friday. We take off at 6:30 at COSI on the Genoa Park side. We're going to have tunes by CD 102.5. We're going to have free food. We're going to have great registration. So you can pre-register up until Wednesday at midnight. And then the mayor's going to lead a beautiful tour of neighborhoods all around Columbus that include great parks, great housing, a diverse mix of architecture. And then people will come back to Bicentennial Park. They'll bike their park for free with pedal instead, and they'll just take a quick walk over the bridge and enjoy the hot Latin jazz band Umbambe. All this value for $25.
That's a great registration fee. Because we have an email from Rose saying, I'm a poor college student. A group of friends and I are thinking about registering for the ride. We were just wondering what we get for the registration fee. So that's it. Do you get a T-shirt?
There's a great deal of value this year. So
is there swag?
There's swag. So the swag bag doesn't just have the map of the ride. It's got trinkets from Coda. It's got coupons for discounts from a number of places. We also have a raffle this year at the ride in which we have about $1,000 worth of goods, products, and services from restaurants, massages, haircuts, anything you can think of. People should bring a little cash to the ride this year because you're going to be able to have a great chance to win a big package for just a few tickets. But the value of your $25 and a $10 T-shirt is, again, you're going to be treated in a VIP way when you get to COSI. You're going to be taken care of. You're going to get...
I don't know why I'm letting you keep going on like this. Wait,
I'll give it back to you, Ann.
Wait a minute. Betsy called and wanted to know if it's too late to get a T-shirt.
It is not. So we'll have some T-shirts, first come, first serve, for $12 at COSI Friday night.
And Kate emailed and asked, can riders pick up their map and goodies before July 12th? Thanks, and safe riding.
They can. And so that's like our sponsors this year, Trek Bicycle Stores, Creative Foundations, and Norwich Consulting. Without them, we couldn't put on the ride. Trek is having an evening reception Thursday on July 11th. From 5 to 7:30 at their Lane Avenue store. Pick up your swag bag, get all finish your pre-registration, come to the ride, and be ready to go.
Let's take a couple of calls for Steve Magus, the bike lawyer. Michael in Dayton, you're on the air. Hi, Michael.
Yes.
Hi, Michael.
You have a comment?
Yes, sir. I was bringing up the subject. Lots of us don't like regulations. However, as a years back, as an old newspaper boy in Dayton, Ohio, I loved the fact that we had to have license plates for our bicycles back in the 60s,
mm-hmm.
a little plate. And it did well, very well, to protect our bikes. And because I remember it wasn't 5 years after that project fell through that I had friends that worked downtown in the police department. They was over, and they still are, overburdened with bicycles.
Mm-hmm.
They all had auctioned off every year.
Well, you know, I was going to ask Michael, I also read about having their bikes locked to strangers, and the recommendation in Bicycling Magazine was to call the police and have them cut the cable if that happens, because sometimes it can be somebody doing that to try to steal your bike. And it made me wonder, how do you prove a bike is yours? And Steve, could you kind of just generally jump in on this?
Yeah. Every bike has a number on it, so there is a serial number on a bike.
Okay. So
if you know where to look for it, you should record that.
But how can you prove that's yours?
You keep the receipts. I keep a little file for it. I mean, most of my clients are what I call high-end riders, so they're spending several thousand dollars on, on the bike and the frame and all that. And I tell them to keep a file folder, put your receipts in it. A lot of cyclists like to tinker with things so that the frame they buy may not be look the same a year from now because they've added some new derailleurs and they've changed things around. So you just like you protect anything else. I mean, how do you prove that's your camera? How do you prove that's your trumpet or your whatever that was stolen? You keep stuff for bigger items. And then, you know, you take a picture of it. You create a file for those things. And then if something happens to it, you pull that stuff out of hock somewhere and show it to the police.
Okay. Michael, to Michael's question about license plates, Rachel, who operates the board for us, says she had a license. It was called Rachel when she was a kid.
A lot of people did. And it's a cute idea. But is that what we want the police departments doing? Is because there's millions and millions of bicycles in Ohio. I've got clients that have 10 of them. I mean, you know, it's just it's just a huge bureaucracy for what purpose? A car is the second biggest thing you're ever going to buy behind your house for the most part. And there's many reasons to regulate cars to make sure a car actually meets the car rules for being a car or a motorcycle. Bikes, it's just not that big of a deal. And how does it help? And who's going to pay the costs? And, you know. It's just a lot of bureaucracy for not, you don't get much for your money there.
Okay. Michael and Dayton, thanks a lot for that call. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Back to Barb Seckler of the Columbus Department of Public Health. What is your title again? I have it right here.
I'm just
testing you. You're the director of the Institute for Active Living for the Columbus Department of Public Health.
That's right. And we're so excited about the mayor's twilight ride on Friday.
Okay.
The weather's finally going to clear up. So I have a question for you. What's the difference between the Memorial Tournament and the mayor's twilight ride?
It never rains on the mayor's twilight ride, and it always rains on the Memorial Tournament.
Great.
All right. So the twilight ride. Okay. There's going to be more riders that look like our community from the Major Taylor's Ambassadors to Cycling for All. So tell me about those.
So we want bicyclists to reflect our community. So the Major Taylor's are an historic African-American bike club that's really for everyone now. Cycling for All, we are going to have Brent Simons cycling alongside the mayor. In a bicycle built for people with disabilities. We're going to see a lot of women on the road with us because more men ride bikes than women. We're going to see all ethnicities. And so this year, the bike ride reflects our community as it should always.
Rod in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome, Rod.
Yes, good morning. Hello to everybody. Wanted to bring up three quick things. I appreciate what the mayor has done, you know, so far as cycling in the community. So far as licensing and lights are concerned, I have no objection to licensing as long as it's free. And lights, you are required to have lights on your bike use lights on your bike between sunset and sunrise, just as an automobile would have to. A lot of motorists act as if cyclists are invisible. I can relate a number of incidents to you, where cars were doing illegal things. You know, give you an example. I was getting ready to make a left-hand turn off of Sancus Boulevard, and a car came through the stop sign and on another street. This was a side street.
Okay.
And almost ran me over making a left-hand turn. I don't know whether the driver didn't see me or just didn't care or what.
Well, whoever knows, But why don't you get to you have something you wanted to talk about?
Okay. Also, I wanted to talk about the lack of facilities in the deep suburban and exurban areas. You know, we need more facilities. You know, some of this falls under the county jurisdiction, but in many cases, there's no place for the bicycle to ride. I happen to, use the bicycle for transportation, and it frequently requires me to ride on major streets, and there's just no place to ride, especially you get up into an area like southern Delaware County, and basically these are old farm to market two-lane roads.
Well, that's a good, yeah, that just takes me right to my next email. Rod, thanks a lot for your call.
Thank you. Have a good day.
From an email from a listener, I live in the country. We have a lot of cyclists who enjoy riding the hills out where I live. I hate to say it, but there are a huge amount of cyclists who do not use the rules of the road. I've seen running stop signs, no hand signals used, riding in the middle of the road, and large groups clustered together where it is four or five across. Also, many, not all, have an attitude of we are in the right. Hurt us, and we will sue. My point is that permits or registrations are a wonderful idea. Also, a class that has to be gone through beforehand, just to reiterate the rules of the road, would save a lot of scary incidents. And I wanted to bring something up. I know, Barb, you want to say something, but when I don't know if it's changed or not, but when I took driver's ed, there was nothing about bicyclists in that. So why aren't motorists, when they take their classes, taught about bicycling rules?
We've been trying to make that happen for a number of years, and you get resistance because this is how we do it, and there's a limited amount of time and resources. We've tried to approach the driving schools to add something to their curriculum, and those are all no thanks. You know, we don't need your help. So it's a struggle. Education, yeah. To me, as the caller said earlier, that's critical. Educating mm-hmm. cyclists on how to ride. All of the examples the caller gave, you know, are examples of bad bicycling behavior. In terms of you're allowed to ride two abreast, you're not allowed to ride more than two abreast. Mm-hmm. You're not allowed to run stop signs, and you're supposed to drive your bike like you drive your car. Sometimes when groups of riders get together, there's kind of a group mentality that sort of takes over, and I've seen that happen as well. And you know, I don't know what the answer is other than trying to educate them. If they're doing something wrong, you give them a ticket. And we've had that coming up several times in Cincinnati recently, where some of the smaller departments, not the Cincinnati police, but the smaller suburban police departments have all of a sudden started pulling over groups of riders for infractions like that. And as long as it's done for the right reasons, I have no objection to that.
Barb Seckler?
I think one of the answers is the City of Columbus's Share the Road campaign. So the mayor and our friends at the Ohio Department of Transportation kicked off just a couple of weeks ago a very aggressive Share the Road campaign. We're distributing thousands of tip cards that give tips for both bicyclists and motorists. Bicyclists should have eye contact with motorists. The bike should be in working order. They should ride predictably. And then tips for motorists: pass with care, as Steve has talked about earlier. Watch for and yield to bicyclists. So we have billboards. We have all kinds of promotion going on. It takes more than just the city and the state to do that. It takes all of us. And so we're going to continue to be very aggressive in educating as fast as we can cyclists and motorists to share the road, because we're just going to have more and more cyclists coming. This is out of the gate, and we're going to become, as the mayor says, Bike City USA.
Email from Bashir. He writes, Ohio needs to promote bike to work ideas to cut down traffic. I lived in Portland, Oregon for 2 years, and I never needed to drive my car. We should take ideas from cities like that, which is, I'm sure, you know, a partial inspiration for what's going on in Columbus. Everybody looks to Portland. We are going to take a quick break, then return to our conversation, inspired by the Bike Columbus or 2013 Bike Columbus Festival. Lots of things going on this week. Barb Seckler's with us to tell us about that. Also with us, Steve Magus, the Ohio bike lawyer from Cincinnati, Ohio. He's been on before. And coming up, we're going to talk about a bike sharing program that's going to premiere in Columbus this week. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, Liev Schreiber. He stars as a Hollywood fixer and tough guy in the new Showtime series, Ray Donovan. He's played more than his share of bad guys, he thinks, because of his face.
Arched eyebrows and Slavic fat pads, unfortunately, I think make me look a lot more menacing than I really am.
You mean like slightly puffy cheeks?
Yes, puffy cheeks.
Join us.
Today at noon on 89.7 NPR News.
Psst.
Support comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation in supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
89.7 NPR News is your source for local news, public affairs reporting, and NPR News. Listen for news on 89.7 FM and at WOSU.org.
I'm Robin Young. Coming up here and now, we'll have the latest from Egypt. Also, a Buddhist monk confronts the culture of suicide in Japan.
He started informally counseling people who were depressed, and he found he was good at it. And so he decided to make helping the suicidal his mission.
Next time, here and now, from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon from 2 till 4 on 89.7 NPR News.
I've got a bike, you can ride it if you like. It's got a basket, a bell and rims and things to make it look good. I'd give it to you if I could, but I borrowed it. You're the kind of girl that fits in.
All right. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The 2013 Bike Columbus Festival this year is supposed to be bigger and better than ever. The big event is the Mayor's Twilight Ride this Friday.
That's right, Ann.
Barb Seckler, tell us about where people can register.
So people want to go to BikeColumbusFestival.com, click on the Mayor's Twilight Ride, and run through the easy registration. That's the way to not stand in longer lines on Friday. And people can pre-register up to Wednesday at midnight.
I wanted to, but failed to mention the Kogo bikes that will be available at the Mayor's Ride. They'll be on hand for folks to become the founding members and ride a portion of the route. This is part of the city's new bike sharing program. It's called Kogo. Barb Seckler, tell us about it.
Well, we are so happy to have about 20 Kogo bikes at the Mayor's Twilight Ride Friday. People can get them first come, first serve, and sign up to become one of 100 founding members of the Great Bike Share that is actually launching next Wednesday, a week from Wednesday, with the mayor at Bicentennial Park. This is a way, if you're a visitor or don't have a bike, you can come and ride the ride. And
it's going to start with 30 stations and 10 bikes at each station.
Yes, we have 300 bikes at great locations like the main library on Grant, CCAD, Columbus State, and people are going to be able to bike from station to station, whether they are going to lunch, running an errand, or frankly getting to work that way.
How has it worked elsewhere, you might ask? Joining us now to talk about that from Madison, Wisconsin, is Claire Hurley. She's manager of Madison B-Cycle. Welcome to the program, Claire.
Thanks for having me in.
Tell us how long B-Cycle has been around, how many bikes, that sort of thing, and how it works.
Sure. Madison B-Cycle launched in May of 2011, and we gradually opened over the course of 2011, just opening with six stations. We closed 2011 with 27 stations and about 250 bikes around the streets of Madison. We're currently at 31 stations and about 300 bikes in downtown Madison.
So what's your goal? Because I know Columbus is starting out with 30 stations, 300 bikes. Columbus is a lot bigger than Madison. So what are you shooting for, Claire?
Well, our goal is to get more people on bikes in the city of Madison. And we've really done that over the course of 2 or 3 years here. And one of our main goals is really to, if we're adding any stations, add to the network density that we have in Madison. Mm-hmm. So our stations are primarily located. Downtown Madison is an isthmus area, so we've got a lot of infrastructure, bike infrastructure, to support non-motorized transportation in the isthmus area to reduce a lot of the congestion that we'll have. So Madison B-Cycle is really focused on getting more people on bikes in the downtown area. So we've had a massive amount of growth, and I'm sure you'll see this as well in Columbus. We went from 18,500 trips on B-Cycles in 2011 to 63,300 in 2012, And right now we're up 66% from last year, so we're aiming for 80,000 trips in Madison.
How does it work, Claire? What's the process?
Sure. Well, you can purchase a short-term membership, which is a 24-hour membership available either online or directly at the kiosk, or you can purchase an annual membership, and that's available online. So what all of our memberships include is an unlimited number of 30-minute bike checkouts. And then, as most other bike shares work, there are usage fees for trips lasting longer than 30 minutes. So the idea is that you ride from one station, drop it off at another station that's close to your destination, and then when you're ready to come back or go somewhere else, you just take out another bike. So you can take an unlimited number of trips during your membership period. We really liken it to an alternate form of public transit. So now, rather than taking a bus or a taxi or your own car, now you have the choice to take a bike.
Barb, how does that differ from the way Columbuses will operate?
Well, Claire makes a really good point in talking about putting more people on bikes. We have the same goal here. And frankly, the Friday ride is all about public health and trying to tackle childhood obesity. Here in Columbus, Kogo is going to operate in a similar way. We are starting, as you said, with 30 stations and 300 bikes. We do have an annual membership. We have a 24-hour rent arrangement. We are not charging user fees for more than a half hour. So people can go from the farthest station to the next, farthest station for the same amount of money for the day. But otherwise, we are really putting a lot of stations downtown, and it's our plan in starting in 2013 to grow with a lot of public-private partnership in the future.
Okay, so Claire, how much does it cost?
Mm-hmm. Well, in Madison, a 24-hour pass is $5. And again, that would include an unlimited number of 30-minute bike checkouts during the 24-hour period. Annual memberships in Madison cost $65, again, include an unlimited number of 30-minute bike checkouts. And then usage fees are based on the length of the trip. So a trip from 31 to 60 minutes is going to be an extra $2. And then it's $5 for each half an hour over an hour. And those are really to encourage sharing of the bikes. So we have over 20,000 members in Madison, and we only have 300 bikes. So we've got to have a little encouragement to make sure that the bikes turn over.
Any rumbles over the bikes yet?
Rumbles?
I mean, where too many people show up to borrow a bike.
Not yet. We're at about, we average maybe 2 trips per bike per day.
Mm-hmm.
We could easily be at 12 trips per bike per day.
Okay.
So no, we haven't really exceeded our capacity yet.
And Barb, what are the costs in Columbus?
It is $6 to rent the bike for a day, and it is $75, like Chicago, for an annual membership. And it is important. The bikes are meant to go about a quarter of a mile between stations. So we do expect people to go from station to get somewhere, drop the bike, go to another station. We will look forward to the day where we have an issue where there are not enough Kogo bikes for all the people that want them, because there has been there's not even the website yet, and people are calling Alta Bike Shares to try to sign up for the founding memberships. We're very excited, and it's just going to put a whole new way to be good to the environment and get people around. Also, taking the bus or parking their car and getting on a Kogo bike.
Claire Hurley, how have businesses responded to the bike stations? What do the bike stations look like, and where are they, and what do businesses think?
Well, the stations in Madison, they're gray. They have a B-Cycle logo on the top of them, and we have red bikes in Madison. So I think they look great. and we've seen a great amount of support from businesses. What we actually are doing now is we get calls almost on a weekly basis asking, can we have a B-Cycle station out in front of our business? So that's great for us to see because we haven't seen pushback. There's been some pushback from New York City launching, and we've had a lot of community support in Madison, so we're happy about that. And there's been a lot of studies recently about how bike share contributes to local businesses and really pumping up the economy with bikes. So we've seen that in Madison, definitely.
And what's been the biggest challenge? How do you, is it, I mean, these bikes have to be maintained. What if they're broken on the way? What happens?
Sure. Well, at least in Madison, every bike gets looked over by our team of mechanics every 2 weeks. So they go through a full safety inspection, including 10 different checks that they'll do to make sure that that bike is safe for riders to use. Most of the time, it's just kind of some simple tune-ups, add a little air to the tires, grease the chain if needed. And then occasionally there will be a flat tire or something like that. So when that happens, our members will give us a call, and what we're able to do is actually lock that bike down remotely from our computers so no one else is able to use it. And then our techs go out and fix that bike either right at the station or they'll bring it back to our shop and go through the full tune-up.
Wow. So remote
very,
lockdown.
Very important that we, we're able to monitor all of the bikes and make sure that they're safe to ride at all times.
This is not for profit, right?
Madison B-Cycle operates as a for-profit business.
Okay. All right. Okay. And Kogo in Columbus?
Kogo is also a for-profit, and we've taken the best ideas from great cities like Madison, Wisconsin. So we do have specially trained bike mechanics who handle all the maintenance for the bikes. They're parked at solar-powered stations, and people don't have to worry about parking their bikes, maintaining it, worrying about whether, if it's stolen. It's all taken care of by our vendor, Alta Bicycles, and people are just going to have a hassle-free way to get from place to place.
Claire Hurley, thanks so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Ann and Barb.
Claire Hurley, she's manager of Madison B-Cycle in Madison, Wisconsin. Let's turn to a couple calls now. I think Bob in Dayton, you have an interesting question. Hi, Bob. You're on the air. Welcome.
I have a question about the bicycle lanes in urban areas.
Mm-hmm.
Are cars allowed to use them as well as bicycles when there's no bicyclists in that lane?
Steve Magus?
Yeah, thanks. It's really dependent on how that lane is defined under the city code, and some of the city codes I've seen indicate that the motorists are not allowed to use the bike lane once once that green lane is on. There was a case in Cleveland decided where a fellow was convicted for riding in the bike lane. There was a lot of controversy about that, but driving a car in the bike lane, there was an accident and some injuries.
Okay, Bob. Thanks for the call. Carl in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome.
I just wanted to point out that according to the League of American Wheelmen, changed its name recently to the League of American Bicyclists, that bicycles preceded cars by 30 or 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
The very idea that bicycles, I mean, what inspired me to call was the guy who, back there at the start of the show, who said bicycles shouldn't be on the roads at all.
Well, I hear you. And we said that roads are actually developed for bicycles. But I understand that people who don't know, they're concerned.
Well, there's a feeling among a lot of motorists that roads are for cars, trucks, and buses, period. And so anyone who rides a bike is getting in the way of the real traffic, when in fact, the fabric of traffic is many colors, and it includes Amish buggies, it includes farm combines out in the country, and it includes bicyclists and other slower moving vehicles, as well as cars, trucks, and buses. The laws for the last 100 and some odd years have developed to accommodate all types of vehicles on the road. And if we follow the rules that are laid out, they're designed to get everyone from point A to point B without anyone running over anybody. So,
okay. Carl, thanks a lot for that call. I was in a situation in Clintonville trying to cross North Broadway, and there was a left turn light. So I'm not going to cross until that left turn light's off, right? You know, I'm going across the thing. I'm not making a left-hand turn. I'm going to go across. And there's cars waiting to make left-hand turns.
Right.
I have to let them go first, but they kept waiting for me to cross first. It was me and a couple other bicyclists. Right. Like, we can't cross.
Right.
You've got the light. I mean, in other words, treat the road
treat the rules. Just follow the rules.
Follow the rules. Right. And that's all out there for us.
I ride on the trails in Cincinnati, and where the trail intersects the road, the cyclist has to stop.
Right.
And they've actually had some wrecks and some tickets issued for that. But in some spots, the cars will stop and kind of wave you on, which is okay, but it's
once again, they're being nice.
They are.
They're being nice, but it's not appropriate.
Well, it puts people at risk, because if the next guy doesn't see that and you're in the middle of the road crossing in front of somebody who's coming, it's your fault. The waiver doesn't have really any liability.
Do bikes have to stop at all stop signs, just like cars?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
So the bike's a twilight ride, and we're going to have police presence, but I must say that the messaging we're going to do all week and the message from our police sergeant Friday at 6:30 is going to be to follow the rules of the road.
And a great learning experience.
A great learning experience, and we have a lot of safety features built in Friday evening to ensure, including everyone who must wear a helmet, that it's a safe ride.
Jean in Columbus, you want to end this on a positive note?
I'm so glad that your theme is educating, because my experience with sharing the road has been terrible. 80% of the bicyclists are not obeying the rules of the road, and the 20% that are, and I respect them and do what I'm supposed to do, and a motorist behind me will get so angry that I'm terrified in our culture of guns and so forth. So I'm so glad that it's education-oriented, because it is so needed.
And I think the numbers don't quite support that thesis. There's in Ohio each year, there are around 300,000 car crashes. So 600,000 motorists run into each other, each of those caused by some motorist's goof-up. There are around 2,000 bike crashes, and half of those involve kids. So around 1,000 adults are involved in bike crashes, and about half of those are the fault of the motorist. So, I mean,
But you don't want to be in a bike crash.
No, you do not.
It's
you never
much
win.
More dangerous.
You never win that case. But the numbers support that we're doing things right.
Real quick, Mayor's Twilight Ride, Friday, July 12th at 6:30 p.m. in downtown Columbus. It begins and ends at COSI. Free car parking in the grass lot behind the COSI. Free bike parking will also be available. The cost is $25 plus $10 if you want a T-shirt. And the proceeds will fund bikes and helmets for kids in need and support bicycle safety initiatives. And the riders have the choice of a 10-mile or a 25-mile route through downtown and surrounding neighborhoods. Register today. We'll have this on our website at bikecolumbusfestival.com. But if you want to go to our website at wosu.org/allsides, you can get it there as well. We'll have a link for you. Barb Seckler, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
And thanks for having us on. And thanks for doing an annual bicycle show. I think that it brings a lot of education to your listening audience, and it just helps everybody. So thanks so much.
You're welcome. Barb Seckler, she's director of the Institute for Active Living for the Columbus Department of Public Health. And what fun to have Steve Magus right here in the studio with us today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me up here. And next time I'll bring a bike and we'll take a ride after the show.
Steve Magus, he's an avid bicyclist, motorcyclist, and trial attorney based in Cincinnati, specializing in bicycling law. Thanks a lot for listening. Ride safe out there. Drive safe as well. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is Listener supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media.